All right, everybody, how are you doing? I have with me Alexander Mercurs in London, and I also have Crypto Rich in London as well. So guys, how are you doing? Crypto Rich, you want to give a shout out, maybe a plug to your channel? You are in London, correct?
I'm outside London.
Oh, you're outside. Okay, close enough. So you want to give a shout out, and then we'll get started to talk about Bitcoin and everything that's happening there?
Sure. So thank you so much for having me back on your channel. You know, I listen to all your shows and everything, and it's a treat to be back on. I run a cryptocurrency YouTube channel since April 2017. I focus particularly on specific projects, you know, that I developed a relationship with, small market cap coins. And I'm also on BitChute and BitTube.tv and Library and Odyssey. And on Twitter, and I've got a Telegram announcement group. You can find me there. And the problem with YouTube is the censorship.
Yeah, so we know it well enough. We know it. We know it well. So Crypto, let's get started.
Sorry, Alex, before we do that, I just want to give a shout out to one of your viewers who contacted me via LinkedIn as well and said that she saw somebody who looked like me on the Durant, and she listens to the Durant, and she thinks it's a really great program. And she knows who she is. So hello, if you're watching this.
All right, cool. Great to hear that. So what we have now is Bitcoin, I believe, is at 35K USD. It's surging. Is that 35K?
Yeah, it actually, Bitcoin market cap, it went above $36,000. So it's a new all-time high.
Ethereum broke 1,000.
Yep.
So what's going on here? Why do we have this surge?
Well, every 12 years, there's a halving in the supply of Bitcoin. And so partly the reasons for the increase in prices is fundamental. It's, you know, it's part of the nature of the Bitcoin algorithm. So in the 12 years Bitcoin's been around, we've had three halvings. And this is the third one. And in the previous two halvings, what's happened is a year after the halving, about a year or a year and a half, Bitcoin reaches an all-time high, and then it goes into a bear market, which lasts a year, year and a half, 2 years. So there's that cyclical. We've gone from 25 Bitcoin being produced every 10 minutes to 12 and a half Bitcoin, and now 6.25 Bitcoin. And the next halving will be in 2024. So what's likely to happen is that it's going to keep going up, because in those intervening four-year periods, the other thing that's happened is there's more and more awareness and there's more and more infrastructure. And on a fundamental level, there's more and more money printing. More and 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 more money printing. So I'm like, well, you know, I can keep my my pounds in the bank and watch them lose value as the government just devalues them and prints them away. It's the same deal with euros and the USD, and I think just about every single fiat currency in the world, or I can put them in something which is going to retain the value. So you could look at it like Bitcoin hasn't gone up in value. It hasn't. The dollar has gone down.
Okay.
So that's the answer, broad answer. And then Bitcoin moves the whole market because it carries so much of the market. It has the largest market cap. And then you have the other coins. The next one is Ethereum, and then the other altcoins, alternative coins to Bitcoin. And then all the time there's lots of development going on, you know, as we're moving over to using blockchain more and more and more with great more and more applications. So that's the general broad answer. Mm-hmm.
Got it. So we'll put a disclaimer here, and we're not saying that, you know, people that are watching this video should invest in what we're advising or not. Everyone has access to the information, and everyone can make their own decision. But you're very positive on Bitcoin. I'm very positive on Bitcoin and the altcoins as well. Alexander, more and more money printing.
Well, indeed. And this is one of the things that I'm sure is driving up the figures now, because we have a major economic recession across the entire industrialized world. And there are attempts by governments to try to support the economies, since their tax take has collapsed, has crashed. The way they're doing that, because they can't realistically borrow much more, because it's become increasingly difficult to raise sufficient funds through borrowing is that the central banks are printing money. And we're now getting very close to the position where the central banks up to now have been printing money and giving it to the financial system, which it turn then starts lending the money to businesses and to the government and to, you know, to the various parts of the financial system. But we're moving ever closer to that point where central banks print money or create money electronically through quantitative easing programs, and they end up going directly to governments. In other words, we cut out the financial system. The government, one part of the government, which is the central bank, creates money, which the other part of the government spends. And then on top of all of this, there has been the new election in the United States, which has brought, or it looks likely to bring, Joe Biden to the presidency. Joe Biden is under strong pressure from the left of the Democratic Party to embrace something which they call new monetary policy, this new monetary system that they're talking about, which basically not only considers quantitative easing to be an emergency thing, something to be done in emergencies, but wants it to be used in order to finance a major program of public spending in the United States. In other words, financing spending instead of through taxes and through government borrowing, through essentially printing money. And there's been, of course, developments in the United States recently. It now looks more likely that the Democrats will be able to gain control of the Senate. And that has made the markets conclude that the pressures to increase spending through the devices that we've said are going to increase, because the constraint of a Republican-controlled Senate looks like it may be removed, and that is putting more downward pressure on the dollar as the markets anticipate an explosion in spending. So they have all of these reasons why there is a loss of support for the dollar at the moment, and a bundling into other things which is seen as having value, which are, of course, include things like Bitcoin.
What about the regulation, crypto? Do you worry about the US government has made announcements that they're going to regulate, or they're going to get involved in Ripple? I'm not quite sure exactly how they're going to get involved, or just in general, there's you know, the governments are saying that they're going to get involved in regulating Bitcoin and crypto. Does that make you worried?
Yes and no. I mean, there's benefits to it and there's disadvantages to it. And I think there's challenges that the government are going to have. The thing about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is that they are permissionless, inherently permissionless. I don't need anybody's permission to go and purchase some Bitcoin or Monero or Pirate Chain. I can just go ahead and do that. And I can do it in a way that's decentralized. And because it's decentralized, then the governments can't control it. Now, where they can is the intersection, you know, between fiat and cryptocurrencies, the on-ramps and the off-ramps. So they've issued some regulations with regards to that. And also they've announced something that's going to be happening with a possible proposal. So one proposal in the US is, exchanges are going to require KYC of addresses, exchanges in the US. So if somebody wants to withdraw some cryptocurrency from a US-based exchange to a particular address, that address has to be KYC'd. Never mind that I got to do KYC to you as a user US-based exchange anyway. And then recently there was a tweet from Jeremy Allaire about the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, one of the banking regulators, which says that banks can in the US can now use stable coins. And what a stable coin is a coin that's pegged to a particular currency. So you have USDT, USDT Tether, which is always worth $1, or USDCC, which is always worth $1. And it's to, if people ride out the fluctuations in price, it's stable because cryptocurrencies are very, very volatile. So it says that banks can accept payments in stable coins, which means there's another stream or another infrastructure or another pathway. So instead of just using SWIFT and the other mechanisms, they can also make and take payments in stablecoins. So in that way, the stablecoins, the cryptocurrencies, are getting integrated into the financial system. And then, of course, you're going to have more and more regulation and regulatory capture, which is good in some respects because it keeps the cowboys out. But it's also bad in terms of the privacy and freedom that cryptocurrencies promise, that's going to be whittled away. But then this is where I think privacy coins come into it, because people can move into privacy coins like Pirate Chain or Monero, and then they're free to transact as they wish.
Yeah, got it. What about digital currencies, Alexander? Venezuela actually said they're going full yes. digital. China's yes. getting involved, Russia, what's going on there?
I mean, this is really very interesting. And I want to make it very clear, we're talking about digital currencies now. We're not talking about cryptocurrencies. There's a fundamental difference, because we're talking about governments, central banks, creating digital versions of their existing currencies. So there'll be a digital ruble, a digital RMB, that's the Chinese currency. By the way, I know that Venezuela's been talking about they want to go full steam ahead on theirs. I think because of Venezuela's profound economic problems, they're going to find it much more difficult. But it's the other big countries, the big economies outside the Western geopolitical system, but which are nonetheless have those intersections, the same kind of intersections with the West's financial system, that are interesting. And there was a discussion recently by a rather interesting person, a lady called Olga Skorobogatova, who is actually the deputy chair of the Russian Central Bank. And she was talking about the ruble, the digital ruble, which is coming. And she made the very interesting point that digital currencies will make it possible to bypass the conventional banking system, which, of course, is a banking system which, because of the domination of the dollar and because of the importance of SWIFT, the interbank payment system, which is based in Brussels, but which is dominated by the United States. The banking system as it exists today is very much something, the international banking system, which is subordinate, if you like, to US political and economic pressures. This lady, Ms. Skorobogatova, indicates that with the development of blockchain technologies, it's going to be possible to bypass all of that, take away, in effect, some of the US's primary leverage, which is used as its key sanctions tool, which is to say you cut off banks from SWIFT. You can do all kinds of things. And then, of course, with digital currencies, you can have digital currencies going directly to people, the same way as cryptocurrencies do. You can convert your cryptocurrencies, presumably, I suppose, into digital currencies. And that way you can enter the conventional banking system as well.
And yeah. they have a full control over you, I mean.
Yeah.
That's the risk of the digital currencies, central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. And I think the ECB is researching one, Bank of England, China, the United States, other places, no doubt. And the risk is then you're controlled. I'm controlled. You know, they can impose negative interest rates.
Yes.
The money gets taken away. They can tax at source. They can also penalize people for perceived transgressions. And given the rise of authoritarianism in the West, you know, like fascism creeps in slowly, 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 little by little, but by little, as we boil ourselves slowly like frogs. I think they're particularly dangerous. And Alexander, I don't know about the intersection between CBDCs and decentralized currencies, because if the CBDCs won't prevail.
I mean, Facebook went down that line in a way as well. They tried to get their currency and it completely flopped.
Well,
I mean, if you have a choice, if I have a choice, you know, do I want to go into this digital dollar or Bitcoin? I mean, I would take Bitcoin because, like you said, crypto, I would be scared to death if one day the government just wakes up and says, you know what, Alex, let me take 100 digital dollars from you because I just feel like it. I mean, they could do it like that.
Yeah. What they could do is they could just keep printing more CBDCs. So why, you know, good money drives out bad money. So if there's an intersection between the two, with people, and it becomes easier, people will go into Bitcoin. And just about the Facebook Libra coin, they're still working on it as DM. And then I wonder how that ties in, given the role that big tech are playing in the world, how that ties in with the Great Reset. But we have a Facebook digital currency.
Yes. The great advantage that currencies, fiat currencies and digital currencies have is that they still operate, they're still legal tender. Cryptocurrencies at the moment are not legal tender. That is the big political advantage and that they are given by governments. So while cryptocurrencies work very well as a store of value, digital currencies have the advantage, if you like, in that they can be used more in more conventional money transactions. What I think is going to happen is I think you're going to start to see more digital currencies appearing. And I think you will start to see competition between digital currencies. And they will, the interaction between digital currencies and cryptocurrencies may be more interesting than you're saying, because I suspect that we will see some digital currencies where governments, understanding the value of making their digital currencies appear strong and reliable, will be resistant to doing the kind of things that you've just said. They will say, you know, have your cryptocurrencies by all means. If you want to use them, to convert them into legal tender, you can do it through our digital currency. And that's a route back into the conventional financial system.
Yeah, and there may be the emergence of an informal side-by-side digital cryptocurrency economy. So you've got the formal CBDC economy, and then you've got the cryptocurrency economy, which is informal, where people are transacting between themselves in a decentralized fashion.
Absolutely.
And with the emergence of privacy cryptocurrencies like Monero and Pirate Chain.
You see, I don't think informal is quite the right word, because there's nothing illegal in this. It is a formal system. I mean, anybody can exchange anything for anything else. There's nothing legally that prevents you doing that. And there is no reason why you can't operate fully, as I understand it, within, you know, the crypto system. But if you want to go outside the crypto system, you now have an outlet, and you can pick, it seems to me, as more digital currencies appear, you can actually choose. You have that right of choice. You're no longer restricted in the way that you were previously, when ultimately, whatever you did, wherever you are in the world, you have to go through the dollar.
All right. Crypto, what about all the institutions that are jumping into Bitcoin?
Oh, yes.
Hedge funds, the banks, I mean, just institutional, but even high net worth individuals, you know, you have the Elon Musks and these guys, they're all jumping into Bitcoin. Is that good or bad?
I think it's inevitable. I think it's good for the crypto space. It'll drive usage up. I think the risk is that it'll squeeze out late players and small people, you know, people who don't have a lot of money. You've got Grayscale and MicroStrategy. In a way, it's kind of inevitable, because these large institutions are really just made up of human beings. And all human beings are doing are looking to see, how can we preserve our value? So Mike Saylor, who's the CEO of MicroStrategy, and they've been buying up billions, I think about $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, which has now doubled in value in the space of a few months. We're looking from, okay, I want to preserve wealth for my business and for my investors or whatever. Where am I going to get the best returns? And one of the problems with CBDC and with fiat currencies is there's always the risk and the temptation for governments to print more, print more. And they can do it really easy with CBDCs. So then, okay, well, I want to protect myself against that. I want to hedge against my money being devalued. So yes, it's inevitable. I think the other thing that it does, it brings a level of legitimacy, and perhaps when it gets really, really big, they're going to be able to lobby governments with their money. Plus, also, it creates competition. A couple of months ago, I read something, electricity in Iran is really, really cheap. And Iran has made it, is encouraging Bitcoin miners in Iran to sell their mined Bitcoin to the government. And then the government can then use that Bitcoin for international payments. Mm. So then you've got the emergence of a fully decentralized currency economy, whether it's CBDCs or traditional fiat currencies or cryptocurrencies. So I think that'll be good.
Yeah. Russia's mining like crazy too because of the cheap electricity. Like they're mining like crazy.
Yeah, I've actually visited a Bitcoin mining farm in Irkutsk, Siberia. It was at minus 23 degrees C at 9 o'clock in the morning. So,
was it just like machines just across?
I went in November, and my friend who runs the farm, who was inviting me there, I said, look, are we going to get a hotel space? And he said, nobody goes to Irkutsk in November. There's loads of accommodation. And it was just machines and machines and machines. And there you've got, it was cheap hydropower. I think this mining farm pays 5 cents an hour, 5 cents a kilowatt hour, cheap hydropower. It's not very hot. So you need less electricity to cool the machines down. So look, if you could print money that other people are going to recognize, wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah.
And I think that's the great promise of cryptocurrencies. And this isn't investment advice. This is, I suppose, more from a political economic angle. We are, you know, on the one hand, with the lockdowns and the way the governments are dealing with this, we've got a shift in power and wealth from SMEs to uber rich, to corporations and big tech and everything, and the centralization of power to bureaucrats. But at the same time, with what cryptocurrencies offer is a transfer of wealth where, you know, people don't necessarily have money. They can, you know, do some research, maybe invest in a little bit in a cryptocurrency, no more than you can afford to lose, no guarantee. Mm. And then make some silly returns.
So, sounds like a plan. All right, I think I hear someone's dog in the back. Is that your dog,
you
Alexander?
Yes, again, that's Mishkin,
okay.
I'm afraid.
Okay, so we'll, do you have anything else to add, Alexander? And
what I simply wanted to say is, obviously, again, you know, we're not investment advising, but this does increasingly look like a completely different economic system that's now starting to emerge. So we have, if you like, the battle between two visions of the future. One is, you know, the new system that people like the World Economic Forum and those sort of people are looking at, which is a highly centralized one. And then we have the other increasingly decentralized one, which is spreading and which I suspect is they're going to find it ultimately impossible to control, and which some governments are looking to supporting as well for their own reasons. So we're going to see the way the struggle over the next couple of years between these two economic models, and be interesting to see which one plays out. I firmly put my money in the decentralized one coming out on top in the end.
All right. Okay, we will leave it there because I think Mishkin is
yes.
He's asking for something.
So, he is. Okay. He is, absolutely.
So, he gets excited when we talk about Bitcoin, I guess.
Certainly does.
Okay. All right, guys, we'll wrap it up there. Once again, make sure to visit Crypto Rich's channel and all the information. I will link it down below in the description box. And of course, anything else you want to add about your channels or anything?
You've got a link to a project called Token Metrics. If people want to go and do some find out about cryptocurrencies, they're really great analysis and information, and invite people to, you know, I would invite people to go and explore, to go it all out. And yeah, please come watch my channel.
Absolutely. I'll put that link to everything in the description box down below so people can check it out for themselves and see if they want to get involved in the decentralized world order, because we don't want the Great Reset.
Exactly.
We don't want that plan. That's not for us. All right. We'll leave it there. Alexander Mercurius at CryptoRich. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.